Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FPC Radio Live. It's Friday, April the 28th, and we're on to day two of the NFL draft. That's right. Round one is in the books last night. Bryce Young goes first overall to the Carolina Panthers. As I predicted, John, they took every last second on the clock after being on the clock for months. I don't know. I'm very down on the whole production aspect of the NFL draft, John. So if I come in like sounding like I'm just a bitter old man yelling at a cloud, well, you know, that's kind of what I'm doing. It was just, again, I find it exhausting. I mean, it was entertaining, but exhausting at the same time. And I thought the Panthers taking just about every second on their 10-minute clock proved that. However, John, I will commend the New England Patriots for taking all of about 30 seconds to submit their pick once they went on the clock. That was impressive.
Yeah, it was, because they got a player at number 17 who, by everyone's estimate, is a top 10 player. So a really good night for the Patriots, at least immediately. I mean, we have to see if Christian Gonzalez can play, and we'll know more about this pick as we get into training camp and into the season. But that's the type of corner I like, 6'1", 200 pounds. He feels almost like a Stephon Gilmore type corner, a guy that you can play man to man with. It's physical, and it's smooth, and, you know, is long and all of that stuff that you like to see at that position, especially in that division they play in. You're going to be facing elite wide receivers week in and week out. So you better be ready. And I think it was a great pick by the Patriots to get Gonzalez at 17.
Yeah. And look, I mean, this wasn't necessarily a position of need for the Patriots because their secondary is pretty strong. So this was, again, this was looking at best player available, so to speak, and I'm okay with that because I do think that this team has talent, and I think a lot of it and a lot of the success is going to hinge on the performance of the quarterback and Mac Jones, obviously. Again, adding to this defense with a really good player, a player that, if you're familiar with the Boston sports scene, both the fan side and the media side, and sometimes they're not mutually exclusive. There was kind of a general consensus of, yeah, we really like the pick, even though, again, I know some people will probably try to spin it as, well, if you really wanted the player, you wouldn't have traded back. No, it's, you know, the Patriots saw an opportunity, created some more draft capital for themselves, and also got a really, really good player. So if you're a Patriots fan, you should be pretty excited about it, and it should be fun to watch the kid play. And your co-host is also a former Duck on the the Pick and Roll podcast, Jet. So I know he's very thrilled with that, as I'm sure is Patrick Chung, another former Patriot and Duck. So speaking of former Patriots, former player personnel director now in Houston, I had a very busy night, Nick Cesario. Swinging a couple trades to get back-to-back picks, number 2 and number 3. So, impressive night for the Texans, I'm not going to lie. I mean, they get the quarterback that they wanted, and they also get the defensive stud, presumed defensive stud, on a team that is desperately in need of a new identity. And good for them. I mean, I'm still always going to say this. I will never believe in the Houston Texans until they actually do something. I just don't have faith in that organization. But this is a good start, and I think a very strong way to use that draft capital that they acquired in the Deshaun Watson trade.
Yeah, without question. I mean, Will Anderson, to me, is probably the safest pick in the draft. You just feel he's going to have an 8 to 10 year career as an elite player. But besides that, you know, the intangibles are through the roof. He's a leader, two-time All-American. There haven't been many of those in the history of college football. He comes from Alabama. So, you know, you just get the feeling that you've got yourself an elite player for the next 8 to 10 years. DeMeco Ryans is now the head coach at the Houston Texans, former player there, excellent defensive player with the Texans, defensive coordinator with the 49ers recently. And I think he probably is going to just be so excited to have this player kind of leading his defense, which is a good thing. And then you get C.J. Stroud, who, again, there were some question marks about, but look, all the quarterbacks that are going to be drafted have question marks, even Bryce Young, who went first overall because of his lack of size, and C.J. Stroud didn't really test all that well. And his Will Levis, who everybody thought was going to go in the first round, didn't get picked in the first round and still available in round two. So the quarterbacks always have those weird question marks. But Will Anderson to me is probably the safest pick in the draft. I feel confident that he's going to be, you know, Pro Bowl caliber player for the next 8-10 years with the Houston Texans. So yeah, they made a splash, and you know, at least they can add talent to that team and try to build.
Yeah, look, I mean, the draft is really, I'm not going to say it's completely a crapshoot, obviously. There's ability in being able to scout and recognize players and talent and all that stuff. But, I mean, you know, we've seen it time and time again. The number one overall pick doesn't always ensure success. I mean, we saw, obviously, the draft was in Kansas City 6 years since Patrick Mahomes was drafted. He went 10th overall. You know, he wasn't the first quarterback drafted. Tom Brady was not the first quarterback drafted. Hell, he wasn't one of the first 198 players drafted. So, you know, there is a crapshoot. It is a bit of a crapshoot. And look, I think the nature of how the draft is covered now creates a lot of unfair expectations for a lot of these kids. And I think, unfortunately, that plays into how they're judged, you know, going forward. Like, for example, you know, the Buccaneers took the defensive tackle out of Pittsburgh, Kalijah Kancey, and you know, they're putting up on the screen, his comp is Aaron Donald. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, how unfair is it to this kid to come into the NFL without taking a single snap, and all of a sudden your ceiling, your expectation, is perhaps the best defensive player of the last 10 years. And perhaps the one of the best players at that position of all time. So it's kind of ridiculous, and this is because they both went to Pittsburgh and they have similar size, John. So, you know, this this whole, they call it the draft machine. This draft machine has been rolling, and it creates, again, some of these expectations that are a little bit too unrealistic in both ways. And that could be the case with Will Levis, who's sitting in the draft room thinking, well, hey, we're coming into this whole thing thinking, hey, we're going to be a first-round top 10 pick. And the reality of it was he wasn't. And now he's sitting there, you know, I saw someone tweet, like, it was actually kind of funny, but I kind of felt bad. They tweeted, like, they probably had him help clean up the chairs in the green room when it was all done.
Ooh.
And I don't know, I know, it's bad to laugh at, but I do appreciate the cleverness and the joke. So, but yeah, look, I mean, it's, expectations are through the roof for these kids. And for a lot of them, John, this is going to be the absolute peak of their NFL career. Maybe not a lot of them in the first round, because we're, you know, obviously we just had the first round. But most certainly as we go further and further in the draft, that moment on that stage is going to be the peak of their career. They may never take an NFL snap, or they may never take any meaningful NFL snaps. So, but yeah, it's just, like I said, I think it's a little unfair that some of these kids get compared to other players that are, you know, really the best at their position.
Yeah, I mean, we hear players, current and former players, say it's the happiest day of their life other than maybe having a child. And for the most part, those guys drafted last night don't have children yet. So this is the pinnacle of their life so far. They're 21, they're 22. They put their time in high school and college, worked their butts off, and now they're being rewarded. And if you're a first-round pick, you get a nice contract to kick off your career, and you just build from there. With Will Levis, it was kind of interesting because, you know, we've seen this before where quarterbacks sit in the green room and are expected to go higher than they ended up going. Like we saw Aaron Rodgers and Brady Quinn and Johnny Manziel, like, sit and stew that they weren't picked as high as they thought they were. But at least they were all picked in the first round. This guy has to come back tonight. Or does he come back tonight and sit in the green room again and wait to see where he gets drafted? I mean, you know, it's got to be humiliating for someone who thought he was going to be a first-round pick, who didn't even make it in the first round.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you gotta, I mean, a lot of these kids are obviously confident, you know, that's part of the reason why they're where they're at right now. You can't be as successful as you are at what you do without being confident. But, you know, this is certainly a, you know, makes you waver a little bit. But at the same time, John, you're probably more determined now to come back, especially today. You know, if you're, maybe if you don't go in day two, maybe then you start to, well, maybe those doubts start to creep in, and maybe you start to think, well, maybe I got to go and sell insurance, like Tom Brady once thought at one point. But it, look, I think, you know, it means enough that it's not that he's not necessarily a first round talent, but it's about need a lot of the times. And a lot of these teams, certainly after you got through the top end, didn't need to draft a quarterback. Like after Houston, after Carolina, and obviously Indianapolis, who drafted Richardson, who really needed a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, to the point where do they think they already have someone who's as good as Will Levis? Like, you know,
well, at least needed a quarterback over. Well, exactly. In that situation, you know, if you're Tampa Bay, you need a quarterback, but you drafted probably a bigger need because, you know, look, Baker Mayfield's not going to bring you to the promised land, but at least he gives you time to figure that quarterback position out. And they go and, like I just said, they get the next Aaron Donald, John. Well, the reality of it is he may or may not be that, but if he's a very good player, then yeah, they made a good pick. So yeah, sorry about that. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, I mean, you always have to look at, again, need, and quarterbacks get overdrafted, right? Three of the first four picks were quarterbacks, and I don't think any of these three quarterbacks are entering the NFL at the same level as Trevor Lawrence or Andrew Luck, or certainly not Peyton Manning or John Elway. Those are the four guys I always think of that were can't-miss prospects.
40 years since John Elway, by the way. 40 years.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I mean, to me, still the greatest quarterback to come out of college, with probably the best scouting grade ever among all the quarterbacks. I mean, he just had everything. But you look at that and say, well, maybe some teams would have taken a quarterback, but the thing about the NFL is next year's quarterback class always looks better because we really haven't scouted them in full. Like Caleb Williams is now supposed to be the next Patrick Mahomes until next year when you're watching closely and you say, well, he's got this flaw, he's not quite as good at doing this, that, and the other thing. So that's the case with the NFL. Because this class was supposed to be a great class when we were talking about it last year. Well, they all went out and played this year, and Will Levis, you know, obviously didn't play at the level that he was expected to. And Bryce Young, you worry about his size. And C.J. Stroud, you just kind of wonder, well, both Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud played with so much freaking talent at Alabama and Ohio State. Like, is it them or is it the talent surrounding them? So, yeah, but it's always next year's quarterback class is going to be better until you get there, and then they have flaws as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting to see what's going to happen with the 11th. And Hendon Hooker, too, who I liked a lot at Tennessee, but, you know, has a knee injury that I don't know if he'll be ready for training camp. And he's also almost Tom Brady's age, it feels like. He's like 25, which I don't think is that huge of a deal. Like, I mean, he's not 30.
What was that?
Brandon Weeden.
Yes, thank you. I was thinking Browns quarterback. Man, talk about fumbling. Talk about fumbling the bag. Two first-round draft picks, and you go with a 28-year-old balding quarterback. I mean, the guy already had, like, the George Costanza, like, hair.
Right.
Maybe I'm misremembering it a little bit, but, it was pretty funny. Anyways, one of the teams that could have potentially been looking for a quarterback, but obviously it was not after news from earlier in the day, was the Baltimore Ravens, who locked up Lamar Jackson finally. And that is something we've been talking about, kind of like the Aaron Rodgers thing, for months. And it is 5 years, $250 million, $185 of which is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about $52.5 million, I think it works out, each year. And it makes them the highest paid NFL player, which, look, this has been a saga, to say the least. It's certainly created a lot of drama between both the organization and the player. But I think, and at times we've expected him to leave and we've expected him to stay. However, it really wasn't until Odell Beckham Jr. signed where you started to think, well, it might be a real possibility that he stays. Like I wasn't 100% sold because, well, we talked about the OBJ contract and, well, money talks. But I had to believe that at least there was some belief from OBJ that Lamar Jackson would be back, and voila, here we are, the day of the NFL draft, and he signs this mega contract. So if you're the Ravens, you're pretty happy, especially after now you think, well, now we definitely get to see Lamar Jackson and Odell Beckham Jr. Oh, and Zay Flowers, who they drafted in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously putting pieces around Lamar Jackson to make him happy. Obviously, you offer him in the money. about, what, 70-75% of it is guaranteed, which is pretty much the going rate for these top-tier quarterbacks, other than Deshaun Watson, who kind of broke the mold. And, you know, he'll be the highest-paid quarterback until Joe Burrow signs with Cincinnati.
Yep.
His extension, although you never know with the Bengals because they're not necessarily a team that throws a lot of money around. But, you know, when you have an elite quarterback like
he'll get paid by someone. Let's put it that way, because if the Bengals aren't going to pay him, then he will not be a Cincinnati Bengal. That's the thing. You're going to see exactly what you see with Lamar Jackson, except Joe Burrow is going to take it the whole way.
Yeah, and if it's similar to what happened with Carson Palmer, right? At some point, he just said, I'd rather not play than play for the Cincinnati Bengals. And, you know, especially a guy like Burrow, who's made some money already, but also some money in endorsements. You know, obviously, if they're dangling $250, $260, $270 million in front of you and 80% of it's guaranteed, then you're probably going to sign that. And I think you have to, because of the way the sport is. You know, the quarterback is even one hit away from, you know, blowing out his knee and being a different quarterback going forward. So, yeah, I mean, the market just keeps going up because the money is greater and greater and greater. I mean, the salary cap's up to about $230 million. It's headed to $300 million over the next several years as the TV money comes in. So quarterbacks are going to be making $50, $55 million, and that's the new NFL.
Makes me think I should have probably been a quarterback, right? Too bad
Instead
I didn't
of a
have...
goalie?
Yeah, well, you know, well... That's true.
Same makeup, right?
Hockey players make a fraction of what NFL players
really
do. But yes, there is a lot of similarities in the position. It's just like a pitcher. There's a lot of individualness. I don't know if that's a word, individualness. I don't know. But you understand what I'm saying. It's a individual aspect in a team sport where it's like you have a lot of control. There's a lot of, you know, obviously the team around you, but there's a lot on you individually, just like a quarterback, just like a pitcher.
Well, Linus Ullmark said that to be a great goaltender, you have to have the memory of a goldfish. And I think he's exactly right because, I mean, you play the position, you give up a goal. Okay, I got to forget that. I'm not going to let the next one in, right? You can't have the mentality of worrying about the last goal you gave up. You can't be George Costanza.
No,
Costanza would not have been a good goaltender, right?
No.
He would have been the worst goaltender.
He would have been thinking about the first mistake he made from, like, three games ago. You know what I mean? It wouldn't work out well. So,
no.
But, look, I mean, if you're the Ravens, though, like, you're happy. You got this behind you. You can move forward. You don't ever have to talk about Lamar Jackson contract again, which was basically the talking point, or at least it was always hovering over any conversation or any sort of discourse about the Ravens. It's like, okay, what's going to happen with Lamar Jackson? Are they going to sign Lamar Jackson? Is he going to go somewhere else? And, you know, fortunately for them, he is not. So, all right, before we go, we got to get off a little bit early today. I do want to talk about the NBA because there was one game, John, and thank whoever, all right? But the Celtics closed this out because I was starting to be a little bit concerned as the game, they weren't able to quite close the game out, but eventually they went on an 11-0 run in the fourth quarter and just really kind of dominated. And, well, now they're on their way to playing the 76ers, as we all expected. And the good thing about closing it out in six is, well, that means they get to start against the 76ers a little bit earlier, a team that is desperately using every day they can to rest Joel Embiid. So good stuff for the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, give Atlanta credit. I mean, they took this series to six games, and part of the reason that happened is the Celtics fumbled their way in a couple of games, especially in game five when they were up 12 with 5.5 minutes left and then played horrible basketball both offensively and defensively, which necessitated a trip back to Atlanta for game six. Atlanta battled them all night last night. Trae Young was incredible in the first half, horrible in the second half. He was 1 of 11 from the floor in the second half. But that was a three-point Atlanta lead midway through the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like you said, that 11-0 run. They finished the game on an 18-7 run, and it was on the defensive end. Look, as much as the sport is about three-point shooting and team scoring in the 120s, it's still vital that you are able to put together a 4 or 5 minute stretch, especially in the fourth quarter where you play lockdown defense and you can turn a three-point deficit into an eight-point lead and eventually wrap this series up. The Celtics have the ability to do that. They don't always do it, but last night they did, and now they're on to play Philadelphia.
Yeah, and look, I mean, to come back and have that closeout fourth quarter after Game 5's kind of debacle, I think that's a good thing for this team. So the tight game down the stretch, I think, was maybe a blessing in disguise because it gave them the an opportunity to kind of, you know, redeem. Like you said, they gave that game five away. That should have ended in five. And you would have been feeling pretty comfortable going into the second round. I mean, you still should. I mean, there's no reason to really doubt this team. I mean, we've seen these issues before, and they were able to get all the way to the NBA Finals. So if they're just slightly better, John, this time around, they could possibly be winning instead of watching another team celebrate on home court. So, yeah, I just, you know, like I said, it was good for them to close it out. You got good, obviously great performances from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, big plays down the stretch, big defensive plays. So yeah, you got to feel comfortable going in, even with or without Joel Embiid. I mean, the 76ers, and you've said it a lot every time we talk about it, pretty much they just do not match up well against the Celtics, and you got to figure that's going to be an advantage. Then you add in the fact that Joel Embiid may or may not play, and if he does, how healthy is he? You gotta be happy with where the Celtics are right now.
Oh, without question, they match up really well against Philadelphia, and Embiid is such a great player. He's going to be the MVP of the league. How healthy is he going into this series? We'll find out Monday night in Game One. He's a guy obviously capable of going out and scoring 40 points in his sleep and being efficient doing it. But where else do you get points? With Philadelphia, James Harden is up and down and up and down. And Tyrese Maxey's a really good player. He's had some good games against the Celtics, but he's also had some really poor games against the Celtics. The Celtics are just too deep. You know, when you bring in Malcolm Brogdon off the bench, sixth man of the year, Malcolm Brogdon, you've got instant offense there. You got Rob Williams coming in playing at a high level. He's healthier than he was last year. They didn't have Brogdon last year. You know, two key pieces on what I think is going to put them over the top. So I like their chances against Philadelphia. Home court advantage, and you match up well against them. And the 76ers do have a tendency of screwing up. I mean, you know, they've been doing that for the last 5 years since the process has taken hold. And again, I think the Celtics should be in good shape against this team.
Yeah, and like you said, it all gets started on Monday. So so obviously tonight, second round continues. I believe the Steelers are on the clock with a lot of speculation about Joey Porter Jr., which would be very fitting for the Steelers to take and kind of right up their, you know, alley when it comes to how they draft. So that gets started again tonight, and then tomorrow we wrap it up with the rest of the draft. So that means on Monday, John, we'll be talking obviously game one between the Celtics 76ers, and hopefully we'll be talking about the Bruins having already advanced. They get a chance to do that tonight. But we will also be recapping what we've seen from the draft and kind of our closing thoughts as we move into the next phase of the NFL offseason. So with that said, just want to say thank you everyone for tuning in, and we will see you on Monday, May the 1st. Thank you everyone. We'll talk to you then.